Ladies and gentlemen, we are live!
Welcome everyone to the MMA Weekly of Austin Shep Dan on the BX Sports Jedi Network. I am Austin and my co-host Shep Dan. How are you doing tonight, Shep Dan?
Salute to you, Austin. I'm doing very, very well. Coming off of a very, very good weekend. Monday night, ain't much to watch as far as in the sports world, but we're here. Let's talk about some MMA.
Yeah, most definitely. And before we do, do you want to mention our... We do have our podcast platforms. We Spotify, Anchor FM, Reason FM, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc. Definitely check us out on podcast platforms there. And like you said, let's get right into it. We had a UFC event in Austin, Texas this past Saturday on ESPN between Josh Emmett and Calvin Kattar in the main event. A very controversial fight in terms of decision. And... Josh Emmett wins this fight 48-47 on two judges' scorecards, with one judge giving it to Calvin Kattar 48-47. And just like I said, it was a very controversial decision. I personally did not agree with this decision at all. I thought Calvin Kattar won the fight. And one thing I don't understand is Chris Lee, who gave round four to Josh Emmett. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. For those of you who are listening, we're showing the judges' scorecard. As you see, Chris Lee gave round four to Josh Emmett, which I don't understand at all. I don't know how in what world do you give round four to Emmett when Calvin Kattar clearly won that round? It was he dropped Emmett with spinning back fist or back elbow. It's one to two. He outlanded Josh Emmett in that round, and that was rounds four and five were clearly Calvin Kattar's. Calvin Kattar in the later rounds really put on Josh Emmett. It was landing a lot more shots than Emmett was. And I don't understand how Chris Lee can give round four to Emmett at all. I mean, the second round is close. I mean, I know that was another round that people debated. You know, I thought Calvin won considering that knee that put Emmett down and towards the end of the round, like within like 30 seconds left. I feel like that to me, that and also some of the jabs and shots Calvin drew that busted Emmett up, to me, were enough, in my opinion, to give him that round. I mean, yeah, you can see the image after the fight. Josh Emmett, eyes almost shut completely, his left eye. He's got stitches around his eyebrow, looks like. Yeah, around his left eyebrow. And Josh Emmett kicking jab by Calvin Kattar just kept jabbing that eye, and you saw how bad Emmett's eye was getting during that whole fight. And that's not to say Emmett didn't have his moments. I mean, I thought Emmett won rounds one and three. You know, he is a more powerful puncher in terms of between the two of them. And even though I think a lot of his shots were landing on Calvin's arm, Calvin blocked a lot of them in his arms, but the ones that did land were definitely rocked Calvin. As we all know, Josh has got power. But at the end, I think the judges got it wrong. I think personally, Calvin Kattar should have won this fight. And Chris Lee, I mean, how you get round four to Josh Emmett? That's just so ridiculous. I mean, I know the fight. Yes, this fight was close. It was competitive, but a close competitive can also be a robbery too, in my opinion. This to me was a bad job of the judges, especially Chris Lee giving round four to Josh Emmett. It's just ridiculous. What are your thoughts on this fight, Dan? Do you agree with the judge's decision? And what are your thoughts on the fight overall?
First off, want to acknowledge this was fight of the night. Just to cap off the overall night, I know we're going to talk about it a little bit later on, but this was a very good card overall.
Yes, it was.
Very, very good card. It almost, you know, with the amount of finishes it had and everything going on, it kind of left me, you know, in awe and thinking, like, could this potentially be the best card of the year? And for the UFC to get a couple of those, you know, back-to-back, it's very good.
Yep.
Everything you said was spot on about the fight, and I agree with you 100%. I did not think Josh Emmett won this fight. I thought Calvin Kattar won this fight. Calvin Kattar wore less damage than Josh Emmett. I know DC and Dominic Cruz and John Anik, whenever they were, you know, breaking down the fight, they kept mentioning how when Josh Emmett was landing hits on Calvin Kattar, it was moving Calvin Kattar versus Calvin Kattar shots not, you know, looking that effective. But as the fight wore on, you know, I know Emmett still carried the power, but he didn't land cleanly. It looked like Calvin Kattar landed a lot more cleaner shots, and that's why you got the result that you got in Josh Emmett's face looking the way it did. Then you also take into account, like, to me, man, I knew that was going to be what it was going to be when I saw the way people were judging round one. Because you may disagree with me, but I thought Calvin Kattar won round one.
I heard the arguments for it.
I like when you really look at what happened the majority of round one, it's Kattar controlling majority of the round outside, using the jab effectively. The only moment that Josh Emmett had was at the end of the round where he rushed in to try and get the takedown on Kattar. It didn't work, so he landed a couple of strikes, and those strikes eventually edged him over on a significant strike count. But as far as, like, if that didn't happen, Kattar controlled majority of the round. So I can't even, like, you know, unless the moment was that, like, significant where it was a down, where it may have shifted the momentum of the round, I couldn't even give that round to Josh Emmett. So overall, man, I thought Calvin Kattar won this fight just like you did.
Yeah, I thought Calvin won. It sucks because this was supposed to be a title eliminator. The winner of this fight was going to fight the winner of Holloway and Volkanovski for the featherweight title. And, you know, so, you know, especially with a lot of people disagreeing with the judging decision, it's, you know, a lot of people are, some people are going to feel like Josh Emmett is an undeserving title challenger for the winner of Volkanovski Holloway. And especially, you know, to me, it seems, you know, not to expect Josh Emmett. Josh Emmett has been a very good fighter for a while. But it's like, I don't think he beat Calvin Kattar. It's like, I don't think the right guy is fighting for the title next. Because, like I said, this was a title eliminator. Unless Arnold Allen comes back and maybe they do Emmett and Arnold Allen, which I don't think they're going to do. Because we don't know when Arnold Allen's going to be healthy and et cetera. It kind of sucks for the featherweight division considering there's no new, there's no, like, clear-cut contender, in my opinion. Especially how controversial this fight was.
I think it's par for the course. When you look at how Volkanovski won his title, I think it's par for the course.
Well, at least we know that him and Holloway are going to rematch. Well, trilogy fights in two, not this Saturday, next Saturday. 12 days from now. Which, you know, that's a big fight, which obviously Emmett's going to be paying attention to, considering considering he's basically the number one contender in the featherweight division. Yeah, that sucks, you know, for Callum Cater, and it sucks to see him get Robbo a victory. And Chris Lee, how you get the fourth round? That I'm still baffled by that.
Yeah, the later rounds were completely Calvin Cater's. The only rounds you could say were kind of debatable was round 2 and 3, but 4 and 5 are Cater. One, some people were saying were Emmett. Me personally, I thought Cater won it. That right there gives you 3 out of 5.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I gotta rewatch round 1 again, because I thought Emmett won round 1, but I gotta like rewatch it, because for me, round 2 was a deciding round, but you know, I watched round 2 before doing the stream, and that's where I said, okay, yeah, I think Calvin won. But I gotta rewatch it. Maybe you're right about round 1. But yeah, Josh Emmett gets, you know, a controversial, you know, victory. It was fight of night, rightfully so, because there are a lot of finishes in this card. And so it wasn't really like, not too many contenders for fight of night. And this was the most exciting fight out of all the fights. Not that they weren't exciting, but just like back and forth action, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Okay, I guess we can move on to the co-main event featuring Texas' own Kevin Holland and Tim Means in the welterweight division. It's Kevin Holland wins via second round darts choke against Tim Means. And great performance by Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland really showcased some of the power he has in his punches, especially using his reach to really hurt Tim Means, especially towards the end of that first round. And then in the second round, he landed a right that hurt Tim Means. And once it hurt him, Kevin Holland went for the kill, was able to get the guillotine literally went for, but Means went down and Holland was able to transition to a dart choke. That first, Kevin Holland was having trouble getting it tight, but once he got it tight, Tim Means tapped immediately because he knew he was no way he was getting out of it. So this was a very good victory. Gets a game opponent, Tim Means, who was on a 3-fight winning streak. And Kevin Holland, after having a bad 2021, has bounced back in 2022 with two second-round finishes. You know, March, he finished Alex Oliveira via elbows in the second round. Now he submits Tim Means in the second round. So Kevin Holland, this weight cut at 170 has done very well for him, as you know, he does have an advantage. I didn't realize that he has an 80 inches reach for Kevin Holland, which is the largest in welterweights. So I didn't realize how much of an advantage he's gonna have there, which should benefit him. And what are your thoughts on this? And before I mention something else.
Go ahead.
Kevin Holland stopped a thief the day before the fight. After the weigh-ins, he called like a guy's robbing like a store, and he's able to run and chase the perpetrator down and catch him. And it seems like Kevin Holland's always in these situations where he's stopping, you know, criminals, thieves, or people who are getting ready to shoot up a place at the restaurant a couple months ago. Kevin Holland's in the right place at the right time. It's ridiculous. He is like a real life superhero.
Yeah. This guy is Batman.
Oh, no. And I'm thinking it's funny quote. I'm not sure the press conference, you know, the Wednesday before the fight, where he's like, I'm not Superman, not Batman, I'm Black Man.
He's Black Man, obviously, because it's like, yo, he's always finding himself in these situations, and as you can see, he's a great Samaritan. He's not a good Samaritan. He's a great Samaritan.
Oh, yeah.
And like you said, it was a great fight by Kevin Holland. Tim Means did prevent some type of challenge in the stand-up game. He did move forward a lot, made Kevin a little bit uncomfortable, but Kevin ended up finding his range, finding his rhythm, started clocking Tim Means, and when he did, he was able to put him down, I think, he wobbled him in the first round, and then in the second round, he got it done with, you know, finding the place for that right hand twice, and then getting Tim Means in the darts choke. And he's choking his chicken. That's his quote. He's selling merchandise where he's saying he's choking his chicken. So, salute to Kevin Holland, man. Great performance.
Performance of the night definitely deserved it. It's got the fan love, considering he's playing in Texas, where he's from, and was able to get a submission victory against a game opponent, Tim Means, who had won 3 in a row. And, yeah, it's definitely a great victory for him. Kevin Holland's one of the more exciting guys in this division. Well, not just division, all of UFC MMA. He's been like that for most of his career, especially the last 2 years, since he made that run in 2020. And then last year, you know, he didn't do well last year. Still was in entertaining fights and has an entertaining personality still. And now he's won two in a row. And with personality, he definitely has a more opportunity to do things versus a lot of other guys. And Kevin Holland's a guy we definitely look forward to watching fights. Me, you, and most MMA fans. I think we can all agree with that.
Yeah, most definitely.
Wait to see him do next, Kevin Holland.
He did call out Sean Brady, so there's a possibility for that. Sean Brady's been looking to get active. That would be an interesting matchup. Sean Brady is a all wrestling type of guy, so him versus Kevin Holland, I'd love to see how Kevin Holland's defense holds up against a guy like Sean Brady, because the division is full of guys like him.
Yeah, the top guys have that. I mean, Usman, Covington, Burns, more so, you know, jiu-jitsu, and also Hamzad. They have that grappling background, and then you have Sean Brady as well. So definitely like to see how he does at welterweight with grapplers versus middleweight, where middleweight kind of struggle. But those guys are a lot bigger in middleweight than they are in welterweight, so who knows if maybe he has a better time with grapplers. And plus, I'm pretty sure he's working his grappling defense. So I wouldn't mind seeing him and Sean Brady fight. Also, what about him and Michelle Baeja probably fight? That could be a fun fight as well.
Yeah, that would probably be interesting. It's kind of left field. I don't know. Michelle Pereira's on the come up, and Kevin Holland is as well, so that'd be interesting.
Right. That? Yeah, it could be that or a Sean Brady fight. Either way, whoever Kevin Holland fights next, I'm excited to see. You're excited to see. We're all excited to see. We can all agree there.
Yeah, most definitely.
And then we can move on to the next fight, the third fight in the card, fourth fight in the card, third fight down, excuse me, which was between Joaquin Buckley and Albert Durev. And Joaquin Buckley wins his fight via doctor stoppage in the third round.
Wait, before you continue, we just want to let it be known. There was supposed to be a co-main event of Donald Cerrone versus Joe Lauzon, but Joe Lauzon, in the midst of the weigh-in, he injured a suffering on the left leg where he said he couldn't put any weight on it. He was, you know, being carted around, wheelchaired around to just move around in the hotel, so he just was not able to perform there. And Dana White said after the event, he does not plan on rescheduling this fight because that would be for the third time, and he's kind of getting Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov vibes with a fight like this. So that's the reason we're not discussing that fight. The fight didn't happen.
Yeah, unfortunately, it didn't happen, which sucks for both of them, especially Lauzon, who hasn't fought in like 3 years, and it sucks, you know, especially an injury like that where he can put weight in his knee locked up. I mean, hopefully Lauzon gets better, and hopefully both guys can get to fights this year, both of them. But yeah, that's unfortunate for them, and unfortunate that we didn't get a co-main event. Thank you for providing the update.
Yeah, but let's get right back to this Joaquin Buckley versus Albert Durev, because this was a vicious fight, man. Joaquin Buckley and Albert Durev, they had a bit of a drawing back and forth, because Albert Durev and Buckley used to be training partners. So in the upcoming time for this matchup, Durev basically said that he trained with Buckley and he feels like he has a formula, and this fight was going to be super easy. It's really, really easy. And so Joaquin Buckley, he came out, he usually has an edge to him, but this time we saw the extra edge being added, and the result of it was this, ladies and gentlemen.
Ooh, dance on the picture of the Albert's eye that caused the doctor to stop it, because he really couldn't see. I mean, and that is nasty. For those of you who are listening, you can't see the picture. It's a nasty, I don't want to say cut, but like his swollen eyes
shut. There's nothing he can do about it. And that was just due to the amount of, it's just the amount of damage Joaquin Buckley kept imposing on him, and it was systematic. It wasn't like Joaquin Buckley was out there just, well, he does throw hellfire with every fist, but it was calculated. He wasn't overextending to a point where he left himself susceptible to some takedowns. He did get taken down at the end of the round, but Albert Durev could do little to nothing with the takedown, and Joaquin Buckley was just really, really game. That was the only one takedown Albert was able to get. After that, he defended, like, I could say, 6 shots from Albert, and he just kept consistently pouring on the damage. And when he found a home for his hands, he just kept piling on the damage. It got to the second round, where doctors, you know, it didn't even continue. I think the clock, they had it kind of messed up with the clock, where it looked like the third round started, but it really had no business starting. Like, the corners left out a little bit, but the doctor never left the ring. He was just watching the eye. And when referee, I don't believe it was Herb Dean.
Was it Mike Beltran?
It might have been Beltran. But whoever the referee was, when they asked him, just look at the eye, that was it.
Yeah. Right. It was the right call, because his eye was swollen shut, his left eye, and that he couldn't continue. I mean, great call. And Joaquin Buckley, you mentioned he usually has an edge when he fights, but this fight he had an extra edge, considering they were training partners and Durev said that this would be a good matchup for him. That obviously ticked them off, and he definitely proved Durev wrong and hurt him, and really was the better fighter, landing more shots than Durev, was hurting him a lot. And Durev survived some of those shots, which is crazy considering all three of his losses have been KO. And we all know Joaquin Buckley has a lot of power in both of his hands and his feet too. A powerful, powerful man in terms of shots. And he's, and Joaquin Buckley didn't exactly knock him out, but he did finish it. So technically finished it due to doctor stoppage, but still hurt him. He hurt Durev. And that trash talking definitely motivated Joaquin even more to prove a mess, to prove a point, and he showcased that. Had a very great victory for him against a guy with a good record in Durev. And yeah, Joaquin Buckley definitely had a great showing for him in a main card of UFC Fight Night. And I'm excited to see Joaquin Buckley fight next. Who we fight next? Because him and Allen are very similar. They're both guys who you look forward to seeing fight next. Because you want to see them do well, because they're always entertaining fights. You know, Holland has more of the personality than Joaquin Buckley, but their fighting styles are very fan-friendly. So you definitely want to see both of them fight, every time they fight, no matter who it is.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. From there...
You got a performance bonus, right, Joaquin?
Yeah. Dana said it after the fight, but everyone that finished tonight got a performance bonus.
Okay, so Joaquin counted. Joaquin did it.
Like that. Dana had to give out like 8 bonuses.
Yeah, you're right. 8 bonuses for performances. Yeah, you're right. I was just counting like the finishes.
Yep. From there, we can move on to the next fight on the main card. This one wasn't a finish here. Demir Ismagulov versus Guram Kudatulaze. This fight ends via split decision. Demir Ismagulov wins this fight, and this was a bit of a chess match. This fight was a chess match. These guys were very calculated with each other. You see there, Demir trying to get a takedown on Guram, but I don't know if he was successful at that moment, but Guram was very good striking. He's got to get, if there's anything that I could say that was Guram's downfall, was that he was a little bit too patient. He had great power. He had great striking. So if he just pushed the envelope a little bit more, he could have potentially won this fight. But both these guys were game fighters, and I think they also got they didn't get a bonus. But this was a very good technical chess match as well. Both fighters were very, very, very good. What's your take on this fight?
I agree with everything you said. It was a very technical chess match. Both guys were very technical. It was a chess match. And Guram's downfall was being too patient. If he wasn't as patient, just pushed the pace more and went after it, he probably could have won this fight from Demir. but that wasn't the case, and Demir was able to push the pace and do more, and that got him the victory in this fight. Very technical fight between two guys who are very good. Both guys, I mentioned, both guys had good records. Both guys had come off, you know, good victories, especially Guerin, who beat Gamat, who's main event this Saturday, which we'll talk about that, obviously. And you definitely saw two high-level, to my opinion, two very talented, probably high-level fighters from Eastern. Well, I'm not sure if Georgia's in Eastern Europe or not. I could be wrong. I think it's more Asia because Georgia's on the south of Russia. But two, like, you know, Euro-Asian fighters definitely playing high-level chess match or high-level technical fights, aka chess match, if it makes sense. But yeah. Guerin, if he just was less patient and pushed the pace a little more, did more, he probably could have won the fight, but it is what it is. I'm pretty sure he'll learn from it.
Yeah, most definitely. From there, we can move on from this to first fight on the main card. Well, no, excuse me. Next fight on the card. I believe this is in the welterweight division. Gregory Rodriguez versus Julian Marquez.
No way.
Oh, in the middleweight division. That's right. Gregory Rodriguez wins this fight in the first round via TKO. And, boy, this fight is also another fun fight and another reason why you had to debate with yourself as to whether this could be potential card of the year. Both these guys came out throwing fire. They both were throwing hell to call. They were throwing caution to the wind. They were both throwing. It's just Gregory Rodriguez was a bit more powerful, a bit more cleaner. He was so clean with the striking, and he just kept moving forward. He got rocked a couple of times, but Gregory Rodriguez kept moving forward and just landing shots on Julian Marquez, and Marquez was wobbled a little. And on the broadcast, you hear these guys talking so much about Gregory's grappling. Gregory's grappling. He's rocking him. And at this point, you know, as he's landing some of these shots and Marquez isn't going down, I know you said it because I said it myself. I'm like, just take him down at this point. Take him down to something. And he didn't take him down yet. Marquez turned his back. And that's when Rodriguez started to, you know, show some of the grappling. Immediately jumps onto back. He gets the body triangle clean. Very, very clean. He's trying to get the trying to get the rear naked choke. It's not happening. From there, he's striking on the back, making Marquez hold his body weight. Marquez eventually sheds him, and there Gregory just continues to work with the in just a closed space, throwing bombs. Marquez lands a couple backs, and now Gregory has to step back a little, get his whereabouts, but then he continues to land it and eventually finishes it. Wow, this was an exciting fight.
You took a lot of things I wanted to say. Both guys threw hand share of bombs, but Rodriguez really showcased his power in his fights and really hurt Marquez to the point where the fight could have been stopped a little earlier at one point. It looked like Marquez was showing up and he just was hammering him, Gregory, but they got up from there. And like that, the finishing sequence when he just dropped Marquez, the way Marquez fell, so he went like sideways. I think he fell like sideways.
His body went marionette cut.
Yes, exactly. And he was out. I mean, that if it was a knockout the night, that'd be knockout the night. Because that, I mean, damn, he really knocked him out. He knocked him out conscious. Sent him to the shower rounds, Jorge Masvidal would say.
There's a couple potential knockouts of the night on this card. They're like, what, seven finishes? Seven Eight. Knockouts? Eight finishes, but no, Holland got a submission, so seven knockouts.
Okay, yes.
And, well, technically six because
Buckley and Duref.
Yeah, Buckley was a doctor stoppage. Six knockouts. You got six of them to choose from.
But, well, this was really bad. The way, like, Marquez fell on the punch. I mean, everything. I mean, nothing to pressure. I mean, Gregory Rodriguez had what a great victory for him. Showcases, he mentioned his grappling, but he showcased his striking and his power. That's what he did. you know, hopefully he doesn't fall over his hands where he bends grappling, but he can use grappling as a weapon to sup his hands, or use his hands to power to sup his grappling. Potentially Gregory Rodriguez. I mean, great victory, and man, what a great knockout. Whew! Go watch the knockout if you can find, if you've seen it yet, because definitely worth watching. It's a highlight reel, in my opinion, knockout.
Hey, we may potentially rewatch it later on down the line if UFC puts it out on YouTube. We will definitely do some watch-alongs and some old fights like we discussed. That will not go unnoticed. Yeah. Yeah, there's something else I wanted to mention. Listen, if you bet money on these fights, and a fighter loses, you should not have the gall to, you know, personally hit up this fighter, you know, message this fighter, whether that be on Instagram, Twitter, and like berate the fighter for losing, because you don't have the stones to get in the octagon the way these guys do. There was a fan that was like literally harassing Julian Marquez for losing the fight. And so Julian Marquez just simply screenshot the message and put it out. And so the fans are just getting at this fan because it's like, bro, you're not even a fan. At this point, you're just so disrespectful. Don't do that. You're not that guy. Don't do that. And that's all I'll say to that. You don't do that.
I agree. That's ridiculous. I mean, come on now. So that, exactly. You said everything I need to say. I'm totally 100% agree with you. Don't do that to a fighter after they lose, considering most of you don't have the balls to step in and fight. Kind of foolish. But yeah.
Yeah.
We'll move on to the first fight of the main card, which was the bantamweight division between Adrian Yance and Tony Kelly, which Adrian Yance wins via first round TKO, 3:29. And I mean, he really was putting a whooping on Kelly. Although this fight was very competitive early on, because Kelly was trash talking him, trying to get Yance to fight emotional. But give Yance credit, he did not fight emotional. He stayed calm. He was a lot more patient, and he's really done there. That image you can see of Kelly as the refs pulling Yance away, and. Like I said, Kelly was trash-talking him, trying to get Yance to make a mistake, fight emotional, but it didn't work as well. Yance was patient and was smart and waited to hurt Kelly. As you know, Kelly landed some shots and I think cut Yance up and around his like eye area, if I'm mistaken. I think there was some blood, but Yance had more power than Kelly and really showcased it and hurt Kelly and just kept dropping him. Well, he kept rocking and wobbling him, and for a while, Kelly was somehow surviving, which was pretty impressive. But eventually the shots wore on him. He got dropped, and then he kept getting dropped again. And Yance just kept pouncing on him, didn't let off, and was able to stop him in that fight. And great victory for Yance, considering Yance went through some adversity through trash talking and. Things like that, and stay composed, which is a lot of young fighters, sometimes they could throw them off. A guy trash talking them during the middle of fights and can't fight emotional, which causes them not to fight well and causes them to get finished himself. And Yance didn't fall for it, so this was a good test for Adrian Yance. I know a lot of people are high on him, rightfully so. And he passed, in my opinion, a test that can help him down the road, considering there's probably going to be guys who are trash talking leading up to a fight and during a fight, personally. So this was a good test for him, in my opinion.
I rushed a little to get to this fight because, man, oh, man, oh, man. This was, I mean, I'm, it sucks that Joe Lozon got the injury that he did, but because he got the injury, certain things works in mysterious ways. You get Kevin Holland that gets bumped into the co-main event, but then Adrian Yanez, and I've been talking about this for a while, this guy is a main card fighter. He walks out. He gets the pop from the crowd because the crowd knows what's about to happen. Tim Means was talking that dirty trash to Adrian Yanez.
Tony Kelly.
Tony Kelly was talking that dirty trash all throughout this fight to Adrian Yanez and prior to the fight. So when Adrian Yanez and Tony Kelly finally got into this, were they throwing bombs at, boy, oh boy, were they throwing bombs at each other. they were just like, you know, and Yanez is, he's a clean fighter, but he did throw a little caution to the wind. He's been, you know, I've seen him be technically cleaner. I think maybe, I think Tony Kelly's range, that's what threw Yanez off a little. So he had to deal with that and he gambled a little. But man, oh man, this was a classic, classic performance. And oh man, this is just great. This was exactly what Adrian Yanez needed. He popped, he took advantage of his opportunity, and he showcased what I saw, what DC saw, what anyone who's ever called an Adrian Yanez fight. When you watch this guy fight, you saw this capability right here. And for Tony Kelly to call him, what, a Dollar Tree Masvidal and things of that nature, it's like, bro, his style is similar to Masvidal in the sense of, like you said earlier, him, Masvidal, Holland, Joaquin Buckley, Francis Ngannou, Derek Lewis, all these guys have fan-friendly styles that, is what the fans want to see. These guys will strike and they are looking for the KO. That's what they're doing. These guys are looking to finish the fight. They're strikers. Yeah, they're all different degree of strikers. But I think the common thread here is that they're all looking for the finish. Some guys, they can get the win however they get the win. But these guys, their style is catered to the finish. And Adrian Yanez, he's a systematical break you down, get you to the point where he's going to throw in punches and bunches while aiming and being surgical. And he's going to go for the finish. Adrian Yanez is looking for the finish because he's an impactful striker as well. And oh, man. Tony Kelly had... I know after the fight, they shook hands and, squashed the beef. But Tony Kelly, you had the gall to say you were not knocked out. You may have been seeing stars. You may have been a little disarrayed, but bro, you were not about your faculties. You were not about your faculties, and Adriana has put you in that place. That's what happened there.
Yeah, exactly. Put him in that place, and exactly put him in that place, knocked him out of faculties, and Yeah, great victory for Yanez, too. Yanez, like I said, gotta keep your eye out because Henry's a guy with a lot of potential, a guy people are high on, and he showcased on the main opening fight of the main card why that's the case. Which was a great opportunity for him. Like you mentioned, Lozon had a pull out, and then him and Kelly got bumped into the main card. And he's, like I said, take advantage of the opportunity, kind of like last week how Jake Matthews and Jack Della Maddalena took advantage of the opportunities last week on the pay-per-view. When they were not supposed to be in the main card, and yet they did. So Yanez did here. And now he's got more fanfare. He's definitely probably in a little bit more high-profile fight next. And like I said, the future's bright for him.
Oh, yeah. Future's bright.
Okay, and go ahead.
Yeah, that's the main card right there. I want to see more of Adrian Yanez. I think every winner on the main card, I want to see more of them. Need to see more of them because this was an exciting main card. But let's get right into the prelims real quick. Is there any fight that you want to shout out?
Yes, the first fight of the prelims, which was between Roman Dolezal and Kyle Dawkins, and I was surprised this fight was on the first fight of the card. I'm still surprised it was the first fight in the main card, but. Gotta give Roman Dolezal credit because he knocked out Kyle Dawkins with a knee. It's weird how he did it too. He got a reforms bonus, rightfully so. They're in the clinch, right? Like Kyle Dawkins was backwards to the cage and they're in the clinch, like I mentioned. And like Dawkins' head was like tilted, but it wasn't like down low like this. I'm trying to demonstrate to the people listening audio. But his head was tilted, and Roman Dolezal just throws a knee, like, very high. I mean high. Like, it was, like, it was high how he threw that knee. Connected and just dropped Kyle, knocked him out. It was one of those, out of nowhere, like, things you don't see that often. It's like a knee down that high landed and knocking someone out in the clinch. Like, I don't see that too often, I can think of. And But he knocked out Kyle Daukaus, and it was a very great victory for him. I believe that was his first finish in the UFC, if I'm mistaken, too. So, and knockout guy in Kyle Daukaus, who's a good prospect from Philadelphia, a guy that's very good grappling, too. So, I mean, good, you know, definitely want to shout, excuse me, Roman Dozev.
That's a great victory by Roman Dolezev. A fight that I want to, the fighter that I want to shout out didn't get the finish, but man, oh man, this was a spot on performance. Natalia Silva in the preliminaries main event, Natalia Silva versus Jasmine Jazz DeVicious. Natalia Silva wins this fight, unanimous decision. There was nothing Jasmine Jazz DeVicious could do other than move forward and be a punching bag. There was nothing more she could do. Natalia Silva was game on every aspect. Takedown defense was on point to a point where she was getting reversals and getting takedowns herself on Jasmine. Jasmine wanted to take it to the ground a lot and do ground and pound. She couldn't even get close because Natalia Silva just, number one, the cardio was on point that she could do this all three rounds fresh, but move around the cage and move around the octagon wherever she wanted. And whenever Jasmine moved into range, pop, 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 landing strikes, kicking her up the middle, kicking her on the side, you know, getting the middle kick in the solar plexus to just get that range back and having her move forward more into more strikes. Game was went on the ground, landing vicious ground strikes, had the opportunity to land some elbows on the ground, and she did. Messed up Jazz DeVicious up something vicious. I didn't want to use the word, but Jazz DeVicious got messed up viciously. And Natalia Silva was just, it was a beautiful performance.
Damn, that's okay. I didn't see that fight, but yeah, shout out to Talia Silva for getting a great victory. Vicious, seemed like flawless victory almost.
Flawless.
Not to sound like Mortal Kombat, but you get what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Any other fighter you want to shout out?
Cody Stamen for getting the 59 second TKO over Eddie Weiland. You know, veteran guy who fought for the WEC Bantamweight title, and WEC is the only place for Bantamweights. And I think a bounce back victory too for Cody Stamen. Guy who's always been right there in the top 15, top 10 at one point. He's had some ups and downs, but got a good victory against Eddie Weiland, a veteran. That's going to be Eddie's last fight because he retired after that. So good luck in retirement for Eddie Weiland and great victory for Cody Stamen, especially. Good, you know, congratulations to Stamen for being a knockout TKO under a minute.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Congratulations to Cody Stamen and Eddie Weiland, thank you so much for the entertainment you've given us throughout your career. Thank you.
Yes.
You know, it will never be enough, but thank you so much for the dedication that you've given to the MMA game. Another fighter I want to shout out on the preliminaries. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of fights to shout out on the preliminaries. We said it before, we'll say it again. You should watch the preliminaries because they will set the tone, and the preliminary set the tone for this card being what it is. Another fighter I want to shout out, Ricardo Ramos. Vicious, vicious spinning elbow. Yes, two of the five spinning elbow knockouts in UFC
really?
History now. That's a large chunk. That's a large percentage.
Yeah, that's 40%.
That's 40%. Ladies and gentlemen, Ramos, man, that's the first one he got there. If you're watching on YouTube on audio platform, I'll let you know. There's two pictures being shown there. On the top one, that's the first one he got. The second one on the bottom, that's the one he got on Saturday. Man, oh man, the game plan because Ricardo Ramos, man, he's just striking, yeah. And he's got the edge on Danny Chavez. And Danny, he's just along the cage, Lawn Cage and Ricardo Ramos, I don't know. Boom! I'm watching the fight and it really didn't dawn on me that he spinning elbowed him until he walked away dancing and got on top of the cage. And I'm like, whoa, wait, what happened in front of my eyes? Because he caught Danny Chavez, and Danny Chavez is just, like, when I tell you he's out along the cage and it's just, you see him slowly falling down and he's just lights out. Like, this was vicious. Vicious.
Dang, that's crazy. He owns 2 of the 5 spinning elbow knockouts in UFC history. He's 40%. That's remarkable. I mean, that's shocking. Because I'm thinking, the reason you mentioned that, I was thinking of how, you know, John Jones used to throw a spinning elbow a lot back in the day and land it. I mean, he dropped Stephen Bonner with that, didn't finish him. And he hit Gustafson in their first fight, spinning back elbow, but didn't finish him. It's a crazy thing. John Jones didn't finish those guys. We had Ricardo Ramos finished 2 fighters with a spinning back elbow. It shows how remarkable that is and how hard it is to do. Well, it's hard to pull off and land, let alone get to a point where you knock someone out. I mean, that's what you remember on Molly McCann, her spinning back elbow back in March in London, because that was just, because it's hard to land, and then it's hard to land. It's rare you see someone knocked out with it. So shout out to Carl Ramos for
McCann, that. McCann was a spinning back fist.
Oh, back fist. That was an elbow.
Yeah, and you see how rare that is. Was it an elbow or was it a back fist?
Chris Ward was an elbow. Well, let me look it up real quick.
I just know Luana Carolina got crumbled. I know that much.
Yes, she did.
Because I know Zhang Weili just also hit Joanna Jacek with a spinning back fist. So, like, these spinning attacks are hard to pull off. But when they land, boy, the payoff is big. But yes, you don't. Luana Carolina got hit with a spinning elbow or back fist?
Elbow.
So it's rare. It's very, very rare. And this guy has 40% of them.
Crazy.
Wow.
Jeez. Man, that's ridiculous. Yeah. Man, that's crazy. Also, shout out to Phil Halls for getting the TKO victory over Duran Nguyen in the second round via elbows. And yeah, you see here him just bloodying Duran Nguyen.
Just bloodying up Duran Nguyen. Duran Nguyen even put out a video of him breaking down the fight. It's hilarious. You gotta check it out.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'll watch it after the stream's over.
Yeah. Man, this fight, I think the controversy wasn't even in the fight. It was after the fight how Phil Halls had some words for DC. And DC had to tell him, like, hey, man, be respectful. You're not picking a fight with me. You just want to fight with this guy. All right? Be respectful. I don't pick fights. I just, you know, do commentary and that's it. And Phil Halls ended up apologizing. But, yeah, he's just, I don't know, after the fight, he's still amped off the victory. And you know, he had some words to say for DC, but quickly had to calm down. And that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely, and like I said, DC's not the guy I pick a fight with, considering DC's bigger, and also, like I said, DC's retired, but still. But yeah, great victory, Phil Haas. A lot of great finishes on this card. This was a very good card. This was one of the top 3 cards of the year, with the London card, the 275 last week, and then this card. These are the top 3 UFC cards so far. Now, which order you want them, you can pick. It's your choice, but definitely, the people in Austin were rewarded tonight. Saturday night, they got rewarded with great fights and an entertaining card.
And they, like, just overall, great crowd.
Yes.
Great crowd. They were just out there. As you can see, guys, that's the stadium before it was filled up. It was a great crowd. Just a great crowd.
Yeah.
They were into it. The seats were practically filled from the first preliminary fight.
Yeah, you're right. They were. You're right about that. I was going to mention, it was weird seeing Joe Rogan in the crowd not calling a fight. Because he was there. He lives in Austin. He was there with his wife, and he was just watching the fight as a spectator. It was kind of odd. I'm not used to that while him calling the fight. He was at a UFC event. But it was cool seeing Rogan there.
Yeah, I mean, he said it's been a while since Dana, when they asked about it after the fight, you know, the post-fight interview, they asked him about Rogan and the potential of him calling the fights here. Said, nah, when he spoke to Rogan, Rogan was like, this was just an opportunity for him to watch as a fan because he hasn't done that in a very long time. So he had the opportunity there. And salute to Joe Rogan, man. He was in the crowd. This was a great card, man. I think, if anything, him on commentary would have helped boost it a little bit. But nonetheless, potential for card of the year.
Yeah, most definitely. Great there, and great card. The UFC, you know, had a great card in front of fans, and it's cool seeing these more of these fight nights in front of the fans. As they do more of it, go back to the way it used to be before the whole pandemic of 2 years ago. Yeah. But great card UFC, great card from the UFC. Can't say enough, great card. Well, we can transition now to this upcoming weekend. And Bellator's back. Bellator hasn't had a show in over a month. In over a month. And yeah, over a month, since mid-May in London, if I'm mistaken. And the main event of that card, as you can see, is the middleweight title fight between Gegard Mousasi, as you can see on the left of the picture, and gets Johnny Alblin, the challenger, to your right. Also, we got the bannerweight tournament, the second half of the brackets, as Denis Sabatello takes on Leonardo Higo in one of the rounds, so not one of the tournament fights, and then there are tournament fights between Magomedov versus Enrique Barzola. So a lot of important fights in this Bellator card, where it be the title fight between Gegard Mousasi and Johnny Eblen, and of course the bantamweight tournament fight. And I do want to talk a little bit about the main event between Mousasi and Eblen. Eblen's undefeated, 11-0 versus Gegard Mousasi, 49-7-2. Mousasi's come out the quick victory over Austin Vanderfort back in late February via TKO, and Johnny Eblen is, like I said, 11-0. He's actually a teammate of Austin Vanderfort, American Top Team, and he, just like Vanderfort, is a wrestler, comes from a wrestling background. I'm trying to remember. I think I wrote down what school he went for wrestling, if I'm mistaken. No, actually, I did not write it down. But it's important to note that he is a wrestler, just like Austin Vanderfort was, and I'm pretty sure Eblen's going to try to take Gegard down, control him with the wrestling, but it's going to be easier said than done because Gegard's wrestling defense and grappling has improved a lot since early in his career. Well, he always had a good one early in his career, but definitely gotten better over time. And Gegard's fought some wrestlers and done well. And for Johnny Eblen, the question would be, what can you do differently than Austin Vanderfort? You know, I'm pretty sure he's talking to Austin, asking him, what things Gegard did, strength of Gegard, etc. But that fight wasn't exactly a quick fight. Austin didn't exactly do much in that fight. So I'm interested to see how Johnny Eblen adjusts to Gegard Mousasi. And if you're Gegard, can he stop the takedowns? And if he does get taken down, can he get up immediately or send a submission around the bottom potentially if he doesn't get taken down? But those are questions that we're definitely to ask and definitely going to find the answers to this Friday night.
The question that I'm asking me personally, because I've introduced me to Bellator, so I'm watching Gegard Mousasi's reign currently. Is Josh Eblen going to even present a challenge to Gegard Mousasi? His last couple of fights, Gegard's just ran through his last opponents. He's really dominant. Ran through him. So, is he going to provide a challenge? That's the only question I'm asking there. And I'm excited. I'm excited that Bellator decides that the first fight they come back with, as far as the main event, is Gegard Mousasi defending the title.
Yes, I agree. Gegard Mousasi, who I've always said is the most underrated fighter in MMA history, in my opinion, doesn't get talked about enough, and definitely has a chance to defend the title again and showcase why he's a legend, one of the all-time greats, and see his dominant run. I mean, the guy has about 50-plus, if I'm mistaken, I believe about 58 fights in his career. And the guy's only lost 7 times. I mean, it's crazy to think he's had that many fights and he's still looking fresh, still winning against younger guys, too. Still dominant. I mean, how can I be impressed by Gegard Mousasi? Everywhere he's gone, he's done well. Pride, Dream in Japan, Strikeforce, UFC, Bellator. He's just great. I mean, watching a legend fight. So Definitely want to give him his flowers before he retires. And obviously, he's got to beat Johnny Evelyn this weekend, this Friday, which I think he'll do. But at the same time, I won't. Who knows? MMA, you never know. Johnny Evelyn might pull the upset and beat Gegard Mousasi. We'll wait and see this Friday what happens. But I'm leaning towards Gegard personally.
Yeah, me too. We can move on, though, from that to the co-main event. Danny Sabatello versus Leandro Higo in the tournament, Grand Prix. Danny Sabatello is running hot right now.
Yes, he is.
Danny Sabatello is running hot right now, especially coming off of that victory against Jornel Lugo, which I mean, a lot of people had Jornel Lugo winning that. A lot of people thought Jornel Lugo could have potentially won that fight, but Danny was just dominant. Jornel Lugo had absolutely nothing for him. So, I mean, does Danny Sabatello do the same thing to Leandro Higo? I don't know. I think so. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I think Danny Sabatello is running, he's running hot right now. I think he's going to move forward, provide that same pressure he had against Jornel Lugo. I think he's going to do the, I think he has his game plan set to walk his way all the way through this Grand Prix and get himself a title shot and a shot at the $1 million. I think he's going to win this fight. What say you?
I'm excited for this fight because Sabatello's definitely made a name for himself, especially that last performance, all the talking he was doing and afterwards, and he's a very confident guy. Likes to talk and doesn't care what people think, etc. Yeah, he's got the typical Italian accent. He's Italian, so he adds on to it. You know what I mean by Italian accent. You know what I'm talking about. And he's definitely a guy he's got a lot of personality. And where was this fight, by the way? Fights right on Stotts. And you know, if you're Bellator, Stotts and Sabatello fight, because that would definitely draw a lot of interest, especially those two guys are very confident people. Don't mind talking a lot of trash and talking how great they are and backing up their talk. But it's not going to be an easy fight, because Sabatello is a wrestler, though. He trains the American top team, but he's going against Leandro Higo, who's got 12 submissions, who's a black belt, I believe, in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So, I feel like the jiu-jitsu of Higo might cancel out Sabatello's wrestling. So, it's going to come down to who has the better striking of the two. In my opinion, the better striker wins this fight. Whoever develops the strike, the better striker will win. And probably can set up, their grappling. Sabatello has the better striking. He can set up the takedowns and do damage. Considering if Higo's hurt, he won't be able to as easily pull up submissions. And if Higo can hurt Sabatello, he can easily get into submissions and put submission attempts on Sabatello, considering Sabatello will be wobbly and it'd be hard for Sabatello to get up considering he'll be hurt. So I think this fight comes down to who has the better grappling. I mean, not grappling, excuse me, who has the better striking of the two. It's an exciting fight. This is definitely a good fight. Can't wait to see what happens in this Bellator Bantamweight tournament. And like I said, I would like to see Sabatello win because I didn't want to see him stop fight each other. If they or wins this fight, we'll fight Stotts next and just see trash talking. And then they're both high level fighters. But I wouldn't be surprised if Higo wins too, because Higo is pretty good.
We shall see this Friday coming up. Very interesting fight. Next fight on the main card, also in the Grand Prix, Magomed Magomedov versus Enrique Barzola. I'm interested to see how Magomed Magomedov comes back. He had that loss against Rafion Stotts, where Rafion essentially out-wrestled him. And no one expected Rafion Stotts to out-wrestle him. So I'm interested to see how Magomed Magomedov comes back. For me, this fight is all about how he comes back and how he readjusts coming off of that loss against Rafion Stotts.
I agree 100%. This fight's all about how he bounces back to that loss to Stotts, where he got out wrestled, which shocked everybody. I mean, I was shocked to see Stotts out wrestling him, despite being a good wrestler. But, Magomed definitely has the wrestling advantage from Dagestan. He does very well as wrestling. But he got out wrestled by Stotts, which was shocking. And let's see how he bounces back against the guy, Enrique Barzola, who's a very good fighter, coming off, definitely on a decent run rate lately. it'd be interesting to see if he can use his wrestling to not to control Barzola, considering Barzola does train at AKA. So he's trained with, you know, Habib and them, obviously, and Islam and those guys. Yeah, he trains with those guys. I'm pretty sure he's working with them to improve his defense. So it's interesting to see him, if Magomedov can use his wrestling to take down Barzola, control him there. Or maybe Magomedov's going to have to rely on striking, which it's possible he might have to rely on striking. Potentially, but or it could be maybe he just takes Barzola down, controls him. I like I said, there's a lot of ways this can go, and it all depends how Barzola looks. Like I say, he trains in AK, so I'm pretty sure he's getting, you know, wrestling training with those Dagestanis over there. This is an exciting fight. See how Magomed bounces back, and also see how Barzola does against the guy Magomedov. Like I said, the both bantamweight tournament fights are very exciting, and can't wait to see them. This tournament's like, I think it has a chance to be Bellator's best one personally. Especially the talent level in terms of the guys who are in it. I think it has a chance to be their best one of they've done so far. Definitely excited to see these fights, or these both of these fights in the tournaments. Can't wait. And I mean, I wouldn't surprise if Magomedov wins. I'm leaning towards him bouncing back. I think he'll early on might have a struggle, but I think he'll win the fight in the later rounds. That's just me, but I could be totally wrong. Like I said, I was wrong about Horiguchi and we lose to shoot.
The champ.
Stouts? Oh yeah, with Stouts, yeah.
No, wait. Horiguchi didn't lose to Stouts. He lost to
we lose to. No, Stouts beat Archuleta.
Stouts beat Archuleta. He lost to
Horiguchi lose to shoot.
Oh man!
Horiguchi. Well, let me see. I'm checking right now. Give me a moment. Yeah, Lugo and Sabatello. That surprised me, like you mentioned. Horiguchi lost to Patchy Mix. That's who he lost to.
Patchy Mix. That's right. He didn't, he won some of the exchanges standing up, but Patchy was still able to just take him down majority of the fight. I remember that, yeah.
That's right, yes. That surprised me. So, this bantamweight tournament's already surprised me. So, I'm only surprised this bantamweight tournament surprises me again. But, like I said, it's a tournament where I think everyone has a shot to win. Sabatello, Ego, Magomedov, even Barzola, Stouts, and Patchy Mix. Any one of those guys, these guys can win legitimately, and that's what makes it exciting.
Oh yeah, most definitely. We can move on though from that to the first fight on the main card. This is a 4-fight main card. Brennan Ward versus Cassius Kane. Feels like this is an introduction. Yeah, I'm not too familiar with either of these guys.
Brennan Ward, I'm somewhat familiar with, because I know he fought recently and got a KO victory, if I'm mistaken. He had been away from MMA for a while. Forgot he got arrested and had some problems, then came back and came back and won his fights.
Yeah, he won against Brandon Bell.
Okay, yeah, because I remember he hadn't fought in a while because he got some legal trouble, but now he's back and now he's trying to win two in a row now. Now, Cassius Kane, I'm not too familiar with at all. This is
He's a regional guy.
Okay, so Cassius Kane has a chance to make a name for himself in the main card of Bellator. I like the name, though, Cassius Kane. It's a cool name, but we'll see, you know, what he does against Brandon Ward, if he can make a name for himself, or if Brandon Ward going to be able to win his fights and, you know, go on a little streak now as he makes his comeback in MMA.
Yeah. Guys, I'll say this once, I'll say this again. Bellator does you a favor. They give you the preliminaries for free on YouTube. And this preliminary says, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 fights for free. And they're treating you too. There's a guy in there that could have been on the main card. He's on the preliminaries, Sabah Hamasi. He's a main card type of guy for Bellator, but they got him on the preliminaries. That's a treat right there. Please, guys, check out the preliminaries. I believe the preliminaries will start around... give me one moment.
I believe 7 p.m., I think. No, 4 p.m., I think.
4 p.m. Give me
4 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah.
Yep, I said it right here in ticker. 4 p.m.
Eastern. 4 p.m. Because the main card starts at 6.
7.
Oh, sorry, excuse me, 7. Main card starts at 7. The preliminary start at 4 p.m. So Friday, 4 p.m. on YouTube. Wherever you're at, if you're leaving work, you know, you're on the train, you want to watch some good fights, I know I will be. That's what I'm going to be doing. Watch some Bellator. So please check it out for free on YouTube. Just subscribe to the Bellator YouTube channel, and they'll give it to you for free.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, it's good prelims, too. You got Anatoly Tolkov, who's a very good contender in middleweights, 30-2 against Muhammad Abdullah, 7-5. That's a fight I'm looking forward to in prelims as well. But yeah, like Dan said, it's for free on YouTube at 4 p.m. Eastern. Check out the prelims. As we can transition from Bellator to this upcoming UFC event this Saturday at the Apex, in the main event between Armin Sarukian and Matheus Gamrot in the lightweight division. A very exciting main event between two up-and-coming lightweights who are in the top 15 or near top 10. Both guys have been in a row. Sarukian, since losing to Islam Makhachev, has won, I believe, what, 6 in a row?
Yes, he has. And he's been calling for that rematch, too.
Right, exactly.
5 in a row.
Okay. And not many guys call Islam, want the Islam fight, but he's been wanting that fight since he took the Islam fight on short notice. If I look back, I didn't realize that. And he still did a good job against Islam. So he really, and not many guys want Islam. So for him to really want Islam shows the confidence in him and also shows how good he is considering he's won 5 in a row since that loss and give Islam some issues in that fight. You know, Islam won. His last fight was against Joel Alvarez and he bloody Joel Alvarez. That elbow to the nose, broke his nose and just left him to pool his own blood. I mean, my goodness. That fight, jeez. Armin did a number on Joel Alvarez who was on a good win streak himself. But yeah, Sarukian's the real deal. I'm high on him, but Matheus Gamrot ain't no joke either. He's a very good fighter from Poland. A guy who I believe is on a three fight win streak and yep. Only lost one fight. And that one fight was to Graham Kutalaitis, who fought on the last card. You know, that was a split decision loss, so it seemed like some judges thought he won. I don't know how controversial that fight was. I don't recall it, but Gamrot has definitely won his last three fights have all been finishes. He finished Scott Holzman with KO, submitted Jeremy Stevens with a Kimura, and then against Carlos Diego Ferreira, TKO him, submission knee to the body, after he broke his rib, I believe. I believe he threw a knee and broke Diego Ferreira's rib, if I'm mistaken, in that fight. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely a guy who vicious, who brings it, and so does Sarukian. I mean, they both win different ways. Both can win by submission and knockout. So I see this fight being potentially like a decision, and I do think Sarukian wins personally. I think Sarukian is just a little bit better than Gamrot right now. Not that would I be shocked Gamrot won, no, but I think Sarukian is a guy who is a little bit more talented. Is a little better at the moment. You know, I think he will fight for the title, Sarukian. I'm going to say it. I would not be surprised within the next couple of years, Sarukian's fighting for the world title. Or it rematches Islam. Whether it be for the world title or not, I think he will rematch Islam. I'm that high on Armin Sarukian.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Man. You're absolutely right. This is going to be a great fight because both these guys are no joke. They're no... You know, they ain't no joke. That's really it to say. Like, both these guys are serious contenders. I agree with you. Armin Sarukian is a bit further along in the quest for contention. But, this is a bit of a toss-up to me. I know you got Armin winning this one, but this is a toss-up to me. Like you said, I wouldn't be surprised if Mateus came out of this winning. But Armin is further along, and he is closer to, you know, true contention. He's closer to being that all-around scarier guy than Mateus is as far as, like, rising in the contention. But I wouldn't be surprised if Mateus won this fight. I mean, this is a toss-up. If Vegas has a favorite, then it should be a slight favorite.
I agree. It should be a slight favorite because I'm leaning towards Sarukian, but it's not by much. It'd be like, you know, the minus odds like 105 or like 115 minus. It's very close type of deal. That's what I'm leaning towards with Armin Sarukian. I'm leaning towards him, but barely. Like I said, I won't be surprised if Gamrot wins, but I'm very high on Sarukian, as I mentioned. I'm sticking by it because I believe in him. It's crazy thing, he's only 25, 26 years old, Sarukian. He's still young. I mean, guy's a young dude, and he's already this far along. I mean, and Gamrot ain't old either. He's only like 30. I think he just turned 30, so.
Yeah, no, both of these fighters are, you know, just entering the prime of their lives, so.
Yeah. And Gamrot, like I said, hasn't taken much damage at all, so Gamrot's definitely, you know, got a long shelf life too. So, I mean, both of you guys are very good. I wouldn't be shocked if these guys fall again. I wouldn't be surprised if both guys fall again, considering I think both guys are very talented, very good. I can see these two rising the rankings and fighting again down the road, within 2 years from each other. Wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all.
And I'm excited for this fight. This fight, it's a great main event too, especially considering next weekend's UFC is ridiculously stacked, which we'll talk about when we get there. But excellent main events.
Yeah.
From
there we can move on to the co-main event, which I'm also interested in this one. In the welterweight division, Neil Magny versus Shavkat Rakhmonov. Man. Neil Magny has been calling out a lot of fights that people, you know, that if you know, once you take the ticket to Vegas, Neil Magny is the heavy underdog. And this fight right here, he is the heavy underdog. And as, like, I don't know, my brain is saying, I think Shavkat Rakhmonov and his striking is just a little too much for Neil Magny. This guy's power is very, very real. Shavkat has a very, very real power, and I think he is gonna he has the potential to put people's lights out in this division. My brain is telling me Shavkat Rakhmonov, but somewhere in my gut is like saying don't count Neil Magny out. That's what I want to say right there. This is gonna be a battle of striking. It's not a lot of grappling gonna be involved in this fight, me personally. I think it's not a lot of grappling here. Neil Magny is going to be more comfortable striking. I think Shavkat Rakhmonov is going to be more comfortable striking. I got Shavkat winning this fight, but I'm not just downplaying Neil Magny. I think he has a slight chance to win this, but I got Shavkat Rakhmonov winning this fight.
I agree with you 100%. I'm not counting Neil Magny, but I'm going Shavkat Rakhmonov. Rakhmonov, because I think Rakhmonov is the future as well toward division. I think this is a legitimate contender for this division, and I think he's going to showcase it against a veteran Neil Magny. He's always in that top 10, top 15 ranking. He's always there, and this is definitely going to be Rakhmonov's biggest test. And if he passes this, I mean, sky's the limit for this guy. And I think he will pass because I think he's a better striker than Neil Magny. I know Neil Magny is not bad on the ground. He's got a good amount of submissions, but Rakhmonov ain't no joke either. He's got 7 subs. People forget, all his victories, which he's 15-0, by the way, are by finish. He's got 8 KO and TKO, 7 submissions. So he finishes, guys. He's a very good finisher. And I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't finish Neil Magny, potentially, because of the challenge. Because, you know, the opposition Neil Magny presents is greater than all the other fights he's had so far. But at the same time, it's not like Neil Magny's never been finished. He's been finished before. DMI submitted him, and Santiago Ponzinibbio, let's not forget, knocked him out in Argentina. Yeah. I mean, Neil Magny can be finished. Now, that doesn't mean he can't be finished, but, excuse me. But at the same time, the opposition Neil Magny presents is a lot greater than all the other opponents he's fought before for Rakhmonov. But I like Rakhmonov in his fights. I think he wins his fights, personally. Well, I wouldn't surprise Neil Magny wins, like you mentioned, but I'm definitely favoring Rakhmonov. I think the co-main event, main event are going to be, in my opinion, showcasing two young up-and-coming, like, guys from, like, Eastern Europe and, like, Eurasia, if it makes sense. You know, like the Eurasia area, like Russia and the former Soviet republics. They're looking near Asia, if that makes sense. I feel like that's what's going to be where, especially these young guys, like Sarukian's young, and so is Rachmaninoff. But also, Gamats, Matus is, you know, he's only 30. He's not exactly an old guy. He's, you know, young up and coming. Even if he does win, it's for him, too.
Yeah, he's still got plenty of time in the UFC to continue, rising among the ranks. Maybe this may be, you know, if Armin wins this may be a bit of a setback, but all in all, he's still game bred enough to rise through the rankings yet again.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited for the co-main event. Main event, very good, very good. Main event, co-main event for this card.
Oh yeah.
As you move to the next fight, dirt fight, no, fourth fight in the card, dirt fight down. Excuse me, between in the heavyweight division between Josh Parzanian and Alan Badat. Badu. I'm not too familiar with these guys. I feel like one of these guys fought Parker Porter recently, but I'm not too sure.
Yeah. Alan Badu recently fought Parker Porter. He lost to Parker Porter. Josh Parzanian, I'm not familiar with him. I'm checking out the record right now. I don't remember any of the fights he's had. I know they both have a common loss in Parker Porter, so there's that. But both these guys are coming off of losses.
Gotcha. Okay, so it was a bounce back fight for both of these guys. All right. Like I said, I'm not too familiar with them, Alan Badu. Not, you know, I do vaguely remember a Parker Porter fight, but I'm not too familiar with it. So this is an introduction fight for you and I, it seems like, for both of us. Big opportunity for them too, considering they're on the main card of a UFC fight night. So, who steps up and has that performance and makes a name for himself? It'll be interesting to see. Speaking of guys, making a name for himself, this is a guy that you and I and a lot of MMA fans are both familiar. It is the next fight in the card, third fight card between Nathan Minnis and Umar Nurmagomedov. Umar Nurmagomedov is Umar.
I'm sorry, my fight order is messed up a little.
Okay. Yeah, my fight order says Umar and Nate Menendez is the fight before that.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
In the bantamweight division, I was saying, Umar Nurmagomedov, a lot of people are familiar with. He's a cousin of Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's undefeated like Khabib is, or finished his career as. Umar, I believe, is 14-0 or 15-0.
14-0.
14-0, okay. And he got, I remember, well, I think it was earlier this year or last year,
he defeated Brian Keller in featherweight with the rear naked choke, but it was just his striking. The kicks were, the question mark kick was literally whoop, question mark. It was literally a perfect question mark kick, and he just kept he threw it like three times. First time didn't catch him, This guy, he was supposed to be
on
the card.
Yeah. Umar, I remember last year he made UFC debut, early in last year, and won his fight, but then he got hurt, and then we had a year to fight. That's why I got confused earlier. That's right, in March, he beat Brian Kelleher and just... Umar's stand-up is pretty damn good. He's got a good stand-up. Him and his brother, Usman Nurmagomedov, who fights in Bellator, both undefeated, by the way, the two brothers, both of them have very good stand-up. Both of them like to throw kicks. Their kicks are very good, both of them, Umar and Usman Nurmagomedov. And he showcased that. He also uses grappling like Khabib does, like you expect from a Nurmagomedov or a Dagestan. He uses grappling. He got the victory over Brian Kelleher. And... this fight against Nate Menendez, I mean, I wouldn't surprise if he just makes it a grappling fight, just showcase his grappling. Or if you want, I mean, now granted, it's going to be a tough fight. Nate Menendez ain't no joke. He's 14-1, so this is definitely a good test for Umar Nurmagomedov and see, like, where he's at. Because Nate Menendez had a 4-fight winning streak after losing. And 4 victories are about... by finish. Am I breaking up? Seems like I'm breaking up.
Yeah, just a little bit. You're good now.
Okay, I'm sorry, but all right. I was saying Nate Maniff's last four victories. Nate Maniff's three of his last four victories are by finish. So Nate Maniff is a guy who likes to finish, and Umar and Magomedov's got a decent amount of finishes. This could be a very competitive fight, and a chance to see how a fight where Umar might be challenged and might face some adversity. I think Umar will win this fight, but I think there'll be some adversity early in the, you know, the first round. But I think Umar will make adjustments and win this fight. I see it being a decision victory for him, potentially, for Umar and Magomedov. Especially, I think he's going to definitely want to showcase his grappling, because name it is, he's like a very good stand-up fighter, but at the same time, Umar's stand-up is pretty damn good, too. So this fight can go a lot of ways. I think Umar will win, but I think it'll be, I think he'll face some adversity, though, personally.
I'm looking for Umar to get the finish. I'm that invested in him. I think he's very, very good. The striking is very intriguing. The grappling's already there. The pressure's already there. But man, oh man, I'm looking for him to finish. I'm a fan. I'm maybe fanboying a little bit right now. I think he's gonna finish. I'm that invested in him, and I think he's gonna get the finish over Nate Maniff. Nothing against Nate Maniff. He's a game competitor. But it's just, Umar is just different, man. I when you see a certain athlete and you have that belief in him that you just think, hey, man, this guy is different. He's going to prove me right. I have stock in this guy.
I agree.
That's how,
I understand where you're coming from. And I think Umar is different. I think Umar will be, a ranked fighter. Excuse me, by the end of the year, if he fights at least one more time. Well, maybe not ranked. Let me take that back. I mean, by next year. Next year will definitely be in the rankings, for sure. If he continues winning, that I guarantee. I think Umar is a guy who can fight for a world title. I won't be surprised by the end of next year if he's in the title contention for bantamweights. And, you know, bantamweights is a stacked division, but I think Umar is that damn good that he's good enough to be in that title contention. I mean, he trains with Javi as his cousin, also a.k.a. Javier Mendez. He trains with good fighters. I mean, I'm high on him, too. But I think Nate Maniff will provide that challenge early on, you know, provide a challenge that he might need in order to improve as a fighter. I mean, even Javi faced some adversity. Even though he won most of his rounds, he did face some adversity on his journey to the top. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, man. But I'm very invested in this one. Can't wait for this fight right here.
Me too. And the fight I'm invested in as well is the second fight in the card team. Chris Curtis and Rodolfo. How am I pronouncing this?
Rodolfo
Vieira. Now, Chris Curtis is a guy who burst into the scene in UFC last year. I mean, he had two knockout victories in the month. He made his debut at Madison Square Garden in November last year, on short notice, too. Knocked out Brandon Allen. Phil Hawes in Madison Square Garden. Yes, and then a month later, he fought Brandon Allen, knocked him out. And the December pay-per-view, the Oliveira Poirier pay-per-view, and became, in my opinion, the best newcomer in the UFC last year. Just because he burst in the scene 2 months, got that two knockouts, and won six fights last year. So this is his first fight, 2022. And I'm very high on Chris Curtis, because Chris Curtis is a guy who's fought a lot of fights and took a while to get to the UFC, but he's capitalizing on his two UFC opportunities greatly. And he's definitely a guy who's not far from, in my opinion, being in the rankings. Like, he's like one or two fights away from being ranked, considering two guys he beat, Phil Hawes and Brandon Allen, have bounced back and done well since then, too. Both fights, both victories have aged very well, considering both guys have won their fights in the last 2 weeks.
Not only that, but Chris Curtis has yet to really show everything he has in the tank. Like, I don't think he's been forced to in a grappling situation yet. All his fights have been mostly stand-up, and he's weathered the test of time in the stand-up game. I'm a fan. My girlfriend put me on to Chris Curtis. She's like, you got to watch him. He's very good. So I'm invested.
Yeah, I'm invested too. And Vieira, I mean, I'm trying to pull up his record. I know I've seen him fight several times, but just trying to remember, like, his record and, like, his performances recently.
I know his last victory was a rear naked choke in the third round. I just, who was it again?
I'm trying to see right now.
Dustin Stolzfus.
Okay, Dustin, that was, okay, July of last year. So it's been 11 months since you've seen him. That's why I kind of forgot about him. So he's looking, he's finding his first, I know he's A1, he's got 7 submissions and, you know, and 1 knockout. So he, all his victories are by finish. And he likes to finish, and he submits guys. So, and he's a very decorated, decorated grappler too. I'm looking at his grappling resume and my goodness, this is going to be best grappler Chris Curtis has ever fought potentially with his career. So at least he hasn't been tested in the grappling. I think he's about to be tested and see how good his grappling is against an elite grappler in Vieira. I know Vieira got submitted by Anthony Hernandez February of last year. Was that the fight where I'm not sure if it was Vieira and Hernandez, but there was a fight where a guy who was a I'm thinking Quay Guida and his opponents, where Quay's opponent was a decorated Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt who competed in tournaments, world tournaments, and was a great submission threat, but he got tired and Quay Guida was able to submit him. That's what I'm thinking
of. That was Quay Guida.
So I don't know why I thought it was Vieira and Hernandez, but it wasn't. You know, Vieira's been submitted before, but at the same time, it's unlikely that he's going to get submitted like that. He's got the clear advantage grappling. I do want to see how Chris Curtis does against a high-level grappler like Vieira. I would not be surprised if Vieira wins via submission, just because of the fact that, because of his level of grappling. But I wouldn't be surprised if Chris Curtis knocks him out either.
I'm not surprised about that either. Chris Curtis has shown that he has the capability to do something like that.
I'm excited for this fight. Definitely curious to see what happens next. I think that's the first fight in the main card, if I'm mistaken, or no?
I have one more fight on my card. I don't know if this fell through or not, or maybe it's we'll find out, but I have a fight here on in the lightweight division, Thiago Moises versus Christos Giagos.
I see it. Yeah. Thiago Moises looking to bounce back considering he was on a roll before losing to Islam Makhachev, who Islam Makhachev is pretty damn good. And Joe Alvarez, which shocked me because especially he got knocked out by Alvarez. You know, Alvarez is a good fighter despite the whooping he took from Armin Sarukian in his last fight. Despite that, Joe Alvarez is a really good fighter, and Moises, I think, is a very good fighter. I think he's going to be Giagos, because I think Thiago Moises is a much better fighter than his opponent, personally. Giagos. Like I said, Greek names, I don't know why I have a hard time with Greek names, so my apologies for butchering his name.
Yeah, I mean, I still believe in Thiago Moises. I think that he's a very good fighter, very good athlete. He's just hitting a bit of a rough patch right now, has to recalibrate, recenter. But all you need is one victory. All you need is one, and that could get the ball rolling in the right way. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Thiago Moises could potentially do if this fight is still on the card. We don't know.
It's on the card. It's on the main card. Right. Just got moved. That's all to the main card.
I'm invested in Thiago Moises, and I want to see what he can do because, I mean, you lost against Joel Alvarez, who looked like a real contender. I know Joel Alvarez didn't make weight for that fight.
That's true. That's right. I forgot. Good point.
That's the other part too. But you also lost to Islam Makhachev, who we see is about to fight for the lightweight title. So like. You know, you lost against two very game athletes. It doesn't mean you're falling off or anything. You just lost against two game guys, and it wasn't your night that night. Could it potentially be that if you get a rematch, hey, you get back in there, you're going to, get the job done? We never know, but you got to get yourself to that point.
Yeah, exactly. You're right about that. And I do think, I was going to say, his opponent, Christos Giagos, I'm not good, you know, solid fighter, but at the same time, when he fights against very good or elite competition, he tends to fold. I mean, his last fight was a TKO loss to Armin Sarukian back in September. Then he's lost to, you know, Darkheart Klaus, Charles Oliveira submitted him back in 2018. And he got knocked out by Josh Emmett in the regional scene. Ooh, Emmett's a good fighter. Despite what I feel about the judging in his fight at Cowan Cater, Josh Emmett's a really damn good fighter. And etc. And Gilbert Burns. It seems like with Christo, every time he fights elite competition or very good fighters, he tends to fold. And I think Thiago Moises is a guy who's very good, a really good fighter, very talented. And I think Thiago Moises is going to beat him. Personally, I think Christo is going to lose to Thiago Moises because I think he's a very talented, high level fighter, in my opinion.
All right, we definitely shall see. I'm interested in that one. I'm hoping for Thiago Moises for a victory for Thiago Moises as well, because I would love to see him get back to, you know, fighting the high level competitors that he did, because he provided them all a problem.
Yeah, I agree, and trying to see, is there anything in the prelims you want to mention?
Prelims, Tufan Nchukwi versus Carlos Ulberg. I'm definitely interested in that one. Tufan Nchukwi, he's a bit of an up and down prospect right now. He's had some good victories, he's had some bad losses. The knockout power is definitely there. He's he's got knockout power, but he's developing as a prospect in how to do more than just knock people out. He's trying to be methodical with his power and the gas tank. So I'm looking to see the evolution of him right there. And the only other fight I'm interested in, first fight on the preliminaries, Jin Ufrey versus Vanessa Demopoulos. I'm interested in seeing Vanessa Demopoulos fight again.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's okay. I see. I'm interested to see how she does, considering she got a big victory her last fight back in January, if I'm mistaken. I believe it was January. Mm-hmm.
Yep, against Silvana Gomez-Juarez, who just had an impressive victory. Who was it? I think on
last week.
Last week.
The prelims of the UFC 275 pay-per-view. Yeah. Okay. I was gonna mention Carlos Ulberg fight against Tefuan, Nchukwi. I'm interested in that because I know Carlos Ulberg, I'm not mistaken. I think he's a trained partner of Israel Adesanya and Alexander Volkanovski, training City Kickboxing. So I'm interested to see how he does. And I know him and Israel and Alexander obviously got a fight next weekend. So let's see if Carlos Ulberg can start the good fortune for City Kickboxing this next coming week, because it's a big couple weeks for City Kickboxing with their fights coming up.
Yeah. But that's it on my end. Is there any fight on the preliminaries you want to shout out?
No, that'll be it. That's it.
All right. So, the main card starts at 7, meaning the preliminary should start at like 5 o'clock.
Oh, wait, hang on. I see something. Unless, I think the prelims start 7, actually.
Oh, prelims start at 7. Okay. All right.
And so the main card starts at 10.
Main card starts at 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock is the main card. 7 o'clock is the preliminary. So please check it out this Saturday. You can watch it on ESPN and ESPN2 and ESPN Plus. Wherever you get ESPN at, you can watch it. They'll have it there. Tune in, because I will be, and I know Austin will be. Very interesting UFC Fight Night card coming off of a potentially fight card of the year.
Yeah, that it is card of the year potential this past weekend and the weekend before the pay-per-view. I mean, this card's got a lot of pressure, but. Hopefully this card can deliver like those past two cards I've done. And then, of course, next weekend is a ridiculously stacked card, the UFC 276 pay-per-view, which we'll talk about next week, because it is stacked. Like, I haven't seen a card that stacked since the first Madison Square Garden pay-per-view. But that's, like I said, we'll talk about it next week. So this card definitely can get forgotten about. Hopefully it doesn't get forgotten about. considering the card upcoming in the past two cards. So hopefully we'll see what stands out, who makes a great performance, what fight delivers, and let's see if we can live up to the past 2 weeks. And also, don't forget Bellator is Friday on Showtime, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific. Yeah, 4 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Eastern to the prelims. Free on YouTube.
You said it.
Right, and I'm trying to think. Is there anything else we need to mention before we head out? Wait, no, we already talked about Cruz and Vera. That's official for August 13th in San Diego. It's official.
Yeah. Other than that, thank you guys so much for joining us. From my end, I want to say thank you so much for joining us on the YouTube platform. Thank you, Maria, so much for joining us. Whether you, if you want to or not, you can support the program with a donation via Cash App. Super chats get taken by YouTube, and they take a large chunk right there, so we can't do anything about that. There's the Cash App information right there where you can donate to us. And once again, thank you so much for supporting us, whether that be on the YouTube platform or on the audio platform, that be on Apple, Google, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, wherever you're joining us, Spotify. Thank you so much for joining us.
And for me, thank you guys for watching, listening to us. We're on YouTube or Rumble or audio platforms like Dan mentioned, on Apple, Google, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor FM, etc. We appreciate the love, support. Appreciate the thumbs up in the YouTube video, channel, and then the podcast listens and etc. We appreciate the love, support, because we're just two regular guys bringing down support we both love. So that's all we are, and we appreciate the support. We're just like you guys, fans, love support. We just talk about it, so we appreciate it. We love support from everyone, and hopefully this weekend has great fights, which I think it will, and can't wait till next week to break down this past weekend to look forward to a big, big UFC next weekend for International Fight Week. Can't wait to break it down, and I'm Austin, Chef Dan. Good night, good day, every time watching this, and peace, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are...